Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, presented by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty, helping home buyers and sellers in Middle Tennessee for 20 years. We are taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Robbie Stanley, Adam Vingan, Michelle Knezvik here with you on this Monday morning. Corey Curtis normally joins us every Monday at 8 o'clock. He is on vacation, so we hope Corey has a wonderful vacation. We'll be back with him, and he'll join us next week on Monday at 8 o'clock, so looking forward to that. So, Adam, I was thinking about this last night. We're right around the corner from NFL training camps opening up. We're just over a month away from football season returning and training camps going on, and before we know it, we'll have preseason games, and we'll be talking about Malik Willis and Will Levis slinging the football around out there in the preseason games, and as you said, 83 days away from the Titans and the Saints down there in New Orleans. So we're getting close to football season being here and being ready to go. And I was thinking around last night, just the differences in some of these teams in the AFC to the NFC this offseason, and the interest level heading into this season. So as you look at it, and let's start with the AFC here. Who is the most intriguing team in the AFC to you, Adam Vingan, as we sit here 83 days away from week one in the NFL between the Titans and the New Orleans Saints?
There are two
that
immediately jump to mind. I know you asked me one, but there are two.
You can do two.
One is the New York Jets, for obvious reasons.
Yep.
With Aaron Rodgers now there, your boy. It'll be interesting to see where the Jets fall in the AFC pecking order. I still expect the Bills to win the AFC East, and I think the Dolphins should be behind them, but I wonder how much of a boost Aaron Rodgers brings to the Jets. He is still a good to great player in the NFL, obviously. I know you have mixed feelings about Aaron Rodgers.
I do.
But I'm wondering about that. The other one, which is maybe, I don't know how much of a out of left field this is, it's the Denver Broncos.
It's a good one.
You know, Sean Payton coming in. You know, he worked wonders in New Orleans with Drew Brees. You know, Russell Wilson was bad last season. Nathaniel Hackett gone after one season as coach. You know, is Russell Wilson that bad? Have his skills deteriorated that much? Or will having a competent, proven coach, albeit one who's been out of the league for a couple of years, will that help Denver? Now, I still think there are the third best team at best in that division behind Kansas City and Los Angeles. You know, the Raiders will be interesting this year too, but I really wonder about the Broncos because they do have, they have players who you think should be good on that team, starting with Russell Wilson. And I'm really curious to see how much the Sean Payton factor plays into whether that team can improve enough to even, you know, challenge for a playoff spot in the AFC.
Denver's a really good one. I mean, the Sean Payton coming in there, I think, is really interesting. And I think you nailed it with the question. Like, was last year a blip on the radar for Russell Wilson, or is it a sign of things to come? And I don't know the answer to that. I mean, I look at his career, and he's been a really good player for a long time. And we know, I mean, he's a 9-time Pro Bowler. He's won a Super Bowl. We know what Russell Wilson has been. It was kind of jarring to watch him play last year. I mean, it was beyond. I mean, you look at the numbers, and the numbers aren't good. I mean, the numbers are as bad as he's been in a while. He had he only completed 60% of his passes, 3,500 yards. He had 16 touchdown passes, 11 interceptions. So he turned the ball over a lot, and the numbers aren't good. I mean, the year before that in Seattle, he had 65% of his passes completed through 25 touchdowns, 6 interceptions before he got hurt. So that's a pretty drastic drop-off from what we've seen from Russell Wilson. So how much of that is him, and how much of that is it's with a new team? Nathaniel Hackett maybe wasn't ready to be a head coach. The offense just didn't work for whatever reason. Like, is Sean Payton coming in, and does deep down Sean Payton believe that Russell Wilson at his age of 34 can be fixed and that he's going to be fine moving forward? Like, I have to imagine – like, to some degree, Sean Payton has to believe that, because otherwise, why would you take the job? Like, his contract, you're not getting out of that Russell Wilson contract anytime soon. So that makes me believe that Sean Payton thinks, he looks at Russell Wilson and says, yeah, I can still work with that guy, and we'll get things figured out, and they'll be good. If they do, I am really interested to see where they end up in that division. They're not better than Kansas City, and I agree with you. I don't think they're better than the Chargers either. But with all the hype they got last year, they were so disappointing. Could this be the year where things maybe start to turn around in Denver? It's very interesting.
I mean, I you know, those are the two teams, you know, the Jets and the Broncos that immediately came to mind in the AFC. You know, they're the I really liked what the Dolphins did last season.
Yep.
It also helped that Tyreek Hill was on my fantasy team.
I bet.
You know, but with Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, and we'll see what happens with Tua. You know, of course, multiple serious injuries for Tua. I can't say his last
name.
Tagovailoa.
I'm not going to even try. I tried, but then I messed up. So
Tua T?
We're going to stick with Tua T here. With Tua suffered, multiple serious head injuries. You know, we'll see if they can challenge the Bills in the AFC East. I mean, I think the Jaguars are an obvious one for people, just for all the reasons we've talked about.
I'll throw another one at you.
All right.
Because there were two that came to mind for me as well when I was thinking about this question. One is the Jets, obviously, with Rodgers going. The second one is the Baltimore Ravens.
Okay? Yes, that was mine too, Rob.
And you had the whole Lamar situation this offseason with his contract, and you eventually got that figured out on draft day. You signed Odell Beckham to that huge deal, and I think paid him way more than anybody else was willing to pay him. I think you're seeing some teams maybe a little bit frustrated by that with the pursuit of DeAndre Hopkins going on right now. But if Lamar can stay healthy, which the last couple of years has been a big F, you know, he's had something nagging each of the past 2 years. He played in 12 games in 2021, played in 12 games last year too. But if he can stay healthy, how good can that offense be with him? You've got Greg Roman out as offensive coordinator now. Todd Monken coming in from Georgia to run that offense in Baltimore. How good can that offense be with Lamar Jackson, with Odell Beckham Jr. coming off his second torn ACL? They drafted Rashad Bateman a couple of years ago, and they just drafted Zay Flowers too. So you spent a first-round pick on Rashad Bateman a couple of years ago. Now you've got Zay Flowers in there out of Boston College at wide receiver, and you brought in Odell Beckham. How good can that offense be? Because I think if they can stay healthy and if Beckham comes back and looks like anything close to what he looked like at the end of his time with the Rams when they won the Super Bowl, like, I think they can be pretty good. And, you know, it's not the Ravens defense of Ray Lewis and Ed Reed running around back there by any stretch of the imagination. But we know what their head coach is. John Harbaugh is a really good head coach. We know just kind of the winning vibe of that organization, as much as it hurts Titans fans. They're really intriguing to me because I feel like if the moves that they've made offensively work out, they're going to be a factor in the AFC. So those are the two teams that came to mind for me in the AFC. The Jets at number one for all the reasons you listed, and I think Baltimore is really interesting as well.
Yeah, I think Baltimore is a good choice. I hadn't really thought of them just because, you know, they've kind of been around for a while. You know, but the Lamar Jackson situation, you know, bears monitoring. I mean, in terms of how he responds this season, and the addition of Odell Beckham is intriguing as well. So, no, I think the Ravens are, you know, an interesting team there too. I mean, I guess you could throw the Browns in there as well, see if Deshaun Watson.
That's the thing. I have no idea what he is anymore.
Yeah,
I've seen Deshaun Watson play some really good football in the league, and he came back last year, and I get it. I mean, he had all this off-the-field stuff going on with his gross behavior. And then he hadn't played football in a long time, so he looked rusty last year. Like, is he, now that he's been there and he's gone through the offseason program and all that stuff, is he going to be the Deshaun Watson that we saw at the end of his time in Houston? Because if he is, I mean, they could be pretty good with the roster they have in Cleveland. So that's another way you could go. Jonathan on the text line talking about the Broncos situation says it'll be like the Jags situation last year. So you had Urban Meyer stuff going on with Jacksonville. Not that Nathaniel Hackett was anything like that with Urban Meyer in terms of the behavior part of it, but it is a coach that was there for less than a year and it didn't work out, and now you're talking about an established head coach coming in, so hoping for similar success, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point about the Jaguars situation, because Nathaniel Hackett couldn't hack it. There's your dad joke.
Good gracious.
As a head coach, and now he's in New York, right?
That was Rex Road-esque.
Right. So
yeah, he's in New York with Todd Downing.
Yeah, he is.
And Rodgers.
What a combo.
I forgot that Todd Downing ended up in New York. Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, to me, I feel like, and we'll get to this, I feel like there are more, maybe a few more intriguing teams in the NFC than the AFC.
Well, we'll get to that coming up next. We'll take your thoughts. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. We'll take your most intriguing teams in the AFC, and we'll get to the NFC coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook. We are live from our 1025 The Game studio, brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. I got some tickets to give away, a pair of tickets to see the Nashville Symphony perform the music of Led Zeppelin at Ascend Amphitheater coming up on June 25th. Be caller number 5, 615-737-1025. Our phone number, 615-737-1025. Caller number 5 will win a pair of tickets to see the Nashville Symphony perform the music of Led Zeppelin at Ascend Amphitheater coming up on June 25th. 615-737-1025. So, Adam, we have gone through your list of most intriguing teams in the AFC. What about on the other side with the NFC? As you mentioned, I think a lot of very interesting candidates in a conference that I would probably describe as a little bit more wide open, at least for the playoff field than the AFC is, based on the quarterbacks in each conference. But who are the most intriguing teams in the NFC to you?
The one that's most intriguing to me, I just pulled up the NFC roster of teams and was like, okay, which is the first team that pops up to me? And maybe this will come as a surprise, maybe not, but the first team that grabbed my attention was the Carolina Panthers.
Okay.
And obviously, you know, part of it is because they drafted Bryce Young. But they made some interesting moves this offseason. They brought in Miles Sanders from Philadelphia. They brought in Adam Thielen, DJ Chark, you know, Shy Tuttle on the other side of the ball.
Traded away DJ Moore to the Bears for the first pick, yep.
Right. So there were a lot of interesting moves they made. And look, I don't expect them to be that good. I mean, we talk about the AFC South being weak. The NFC South is right up there. I mean, you know, I don't expect the Buccaneers to be good, the Falcons to be good. You know, the Saints are probably the favorite, and they may be a 500 team, or as close to what 500 is in a 17-game schedule. So
they hit 9 or 9.5.
Yeah, but, the Carolina Panthers are interesting to me. Just, you know, obviously the Bryce Young factor plays into it, but they gave him some weapons. Now, you know, I had honestly, you know, I had neglected to mention the DJ Moore move, you know, which was part of the package to get the number one pick. But, you know, Adam Thielen is not the receiver he once was, but is still good. I mean, he was playing behind Justin Jefferson in Minnesota, and you know, you're not going to get a lot of action when you're playing with Justin Jefferson. But Miles Sanders had a great year last year for the Philadelphia Eagles, who now have DeAndre Swift, you know, at running back. So I like the Panthers. Obviously, as a fan of an NFC South team, I'll be watching the Panthers quite a bit. But you know, I'm interested to see, you know, what kind of strides, you know, Bryce Young makes this season and what these new players can add to that team.
The interesting part about this is I'm with you. I was going through the NFC, and there are a ton of teams that are really intriguing to me.
The Packers.
The Packers, in all seriousness, I have no idea what Jordan Love is. I have no clue. I mean, I've seen him make some throws where you're like, okay. And I've also seen some plays where it's like, oh, boy. And I think you're probably going to see a mixture of that this year, where he looks great on occasion, and then there will probably be some games where he looks really bad. I don't know what that's going to end up being for the Packers. I think the Packers around him still have a pretty good roster, especially on the defensive side of the ball. So we'll see what happens there. But I'm looking up and down here. I mean, you could go with Dallas. And, you know, Dallas is always intriguing because of the circus that's around them. But Dak didn't have a great year last year.
Ezekiel Elliott,
how good
is
are they going to be? Zeke's gone. I mean, Tony Pollard stepping into kind of the full-time role that he stepped into last year. You know, you mentioned some other teams in the NFC. I mean, Detroit is really interesting to me.
Detroit was the other one that popped to me as well, just because of what they did last season,
yeah,
and the steps, you know, can they take another step forward?
Well, you know, we joke about the Lions a lot here on the show just because of Joe's now hatred of them. But, like, I can see a path where they can be pretty good this year. I think both lines of scrimmage they're really good at. That's where it starts in the NFL. And, you know, how good of a year is Jared Goff going to have? We'll wait and see on that front. But they're really interesting to me. I mean, obviously, Philadelphia, who was 14-3 last year, made it to the Super Bowl, and they drafted, like, feels like 8 players off the Georgia defense the last 2 years. They could be pretty good again. My number one team that really intrigues me is San Francisco, just from the standpoint of, like, at quarterback, what are they going to do? What are they going to be? Like, is Brock Purdy, whenever he's healthy, is he Brock Purdy that we saw last year before the injury? Or do we get through all this and he looks more like the Brock Purdy that's like, oh, he's the last pick in the draft? Because how often do we see this? Like, a quarterback comes in and they have a good stretch, whether it's 5 games, 6 games, 7 games, and then all of a sudden, over the total period of their career, they kind of regress back to what we thought they were. You know, I'm not saying that that's going to happen with Brock Purdy, but that part of it makes it really interesting, just because I still love San Francisco's defense. I still think they've got a really good offensive line. They've got Deebo Samuel. They've got Ayuk. They've got Christian McCaffrey. Like, they've got all these great players. George Kittle. All these great players around him. And it just kind of always feels like they're searching for it at quarterback. So San Francisco would be at number one, because if they do get good quarterback play, I think you could make an argument that they're the favorite in the NFC. Right now, I think it's Philadelphia. I think Philadelphia is the best team in the NFC. But if they get good quarterback play in San Francisco, I think they're right there with the Eagles. And the other team to me is Minnesota, because they won the division last year in the NFC North. They went 13-4, and it was maybe the most quiet 13-4 I can ever remember a team going. And obviously they got bounced in the playoffs. You got the Kirk Cousins contract situation. He's got 1 year left on his deal, and he's an unrestricted free agent. You have what I think is clearly now the best wide receiver in football, and that's Justin Jefferson. I think he surpassed Davante Adams and is the best wide receiver in football. And yet, you don't hear a whole lot about him heading into this year. Everybody's talking about Detroit and the year that they're going to have, and Minnesota just kind of feels like an afterthought. And I realize that they've been in this position a lot where, you know, Kirk Cousins is your quarterback. It's kind of, in a way, kind of similar to Tannehill in terms of the discussion around him, just because I think everybody agrees that Kirk Cousins is good, but he's probably not good enough to win a Super Bowl. But I do look at some of the pieces that they have. They just released Dalvin Cook. And when you've got Justin Jefferson out there, like, they can be pretty good. And I think they've made some improvements on the defensive side of the ball, too, over the last year. So I'm really interested to see what they are this year. I mean, you could throw the Giants in. There's a lot of ways you could go in the NFC.
If I remember correctly, there were a lot of people who expected the Vikings to lose in the playoffs, as they did.
That is correct.
Because I feel like they won a lot of one-score games.
They did.
That was the issue, right?
They did.
There was a lot of luck that was probably involved in their 13-4.
Yeah.
So when they lost to the Giants in the playoffs, right?
That is correct.
When they lost to the Giants, I don't think anyone was shocked. I feel like a lot of people picked against the Vikings in the playoffs because of how they got to 13-4. I felt like they escaped with a lot of wins last season. You know, but you know, you're right about Jefferson. You're right about Cousins. The other team that comes to mind to me is Seattle.
Yep.
Just because Geno Smith had a renaissance last season. How repeatable is that for him? And you know, I look at their top weapons on offense. They've got Kenneth Walker at running back. They've got Tyler Lockett. They've got DK Metcalf. Now they have Jackson Smith and Jigba.
Yeah,
like, that could be a really fun offense.
It could.
And I just wonder about Geno Smith. Was it just a 1 year blip, or it's sort of like we were talking about with Russell Wilson the other way, like, is Geno Smith this good all of a sudden, or was it just things worked out really well for him last year, and he's going to go back to being, you know, a backup in a starter's role?
Well, and that's a division, too, that I don't know that I think it's necessarily winnable, because I think San Francisco is clearly the best team in that division. But I think Arizona is going to be absolutely terrible this year.
Yes.
And I don't know what's going on with Matt Stafford and the Rams, but if Stafford's not 100% and he can't play, or if he's injured at any point, like, they're not going to be very good. So I think Seattle at the moment is clearly the second-best team in that division. And you mentioned it. I mean, the offense with Lockett, Smith and Jigba, DK Metcalf, that could be really fun. And like you said, Kenneth Walker, the rookie stud from last year in year two coming up with Seattle, that could be really interesting. So, like, everybody's going to focus on the AFC heading into this year, which I understand. I mean, there's Buffalo and Kansas City and Cincinnati and the Jets with Rodgers. I mean, you can go up and down the list of quarterbacks specifically in the AFC that are going to capture people's attention. the list isn't that long in the NFC. You've got Jalen Hurts in Philadelphia. We'll see what happens with the San Francisco quarterback situation. But, you know, there's not a lot of great quarterbacks in the NFC. So, in a way, I think that makes it fun because it's pretty wide open in the NFC, and I'm really interested to see, like, who are the teams that can come up and take charge of that and make a push for the playoffs. Is it the Packers? Is this the year the Lions break through and they push up and go to the playoffs? Are the Bears ready to make a move in the NFC North? Like, there's a lot of really intriguing teams to me in the NFC that don't have the quarterback, I guess, cachet that the AFC teams have, but I think it's going to be a really interesting year in the NFC. 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on that. We'll also get back into the Predators and their plan for this offseason coming up next with Adam Bingen, so make sure you tune in for that. Also, make sure you tune in for Nashville Sounds Baseball tomorrow at 6:35 on 94.9 The Fans. Sounds taking on the Norfolk Tides, the AAA affiliate of the Baltimore Orioles. Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by 312 Pizza Company, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Family Leisure. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Adam Vingan, Michelle Knezvik here with you on this Monday morning. Still no word from Joe Rex Road. We hope he had a great time last night in the final night of Bonnaroo.
Should we send the cops to his house
just
to
check? I don't know. I think it'll be okay.
I hope so.
Guys, Rex Road can hang. I have faith in him. He's fine. He was probably thriving.
He probably was. I can just see him right now in the fields of Manchester swaying along to Foo Fighters.
Yes.
Good stuff.
And his daughter, Caroline, just kind of, you know, watching
Being
him.
Being mortified.
What yes. a Father's Day. Love it.
Yes.
Love it.
See how Rex Road
feels like, I was going to say, he seems like the air guitar type. I think
he kind of does.
I think Rex Road's more of an air drummer.
Excellent.
Like, if I had to make a guess between the two, I think he's more of an air drummer than an air guitar player.
Looking forward to a full report coming up tomorrow on the program.
Hopefully videos as well.
In Bonnaroo. Look forward to that. We'll have to share some videos if we get them. 615-737-1025. So we had this discussion earlier, Adam, and I think it's a really interesting one as we sit here just over a week away from the NHL draft. That will be next week here in Nashville. And the Predators have 13 picks heading into this draft. They get 7 picks in the top 83. So there's a lot of draft capital that they've got at their disposal. And it's interesting to have this discussion, I think, both on the short-term part of things, on what they could do this offseason, but also with the long view in mind of what is it ultimately going to take for the Predators to get back to being a Stanley Cup contender. I mean, that's the question at the end of the day that Andrew Burnett coming into this job has to try to answer, but more specifically, Barry Trotz as general manager has to try to answer. How are you going to formulate your team to get things back to being a Stanley Cup contender with a shot to win a championship? That's what it's all about. And I think pretty much everybody would agree, at least I hope so, that next year there's really, to me, not much that they can realistically do this offseason to be in that conversation next year. I understand that they've got UC Saros, but they're a ways away, in my opinion, from being a Stanley Cup contender. So next year, to me, is not really what this is about. But having said that, you do have an opportunity this offseason to make some moves starting next week at the draft if that's what you want to do. So, Adam, how do you evaluate where the Predators are right now, kind of on the scale of trying to get back to being a championship contender? And if you're Barry Trotz stepping into this job, how do you get there? What's the path to getting the Predators back to a place where they're competing for a title?
Yeah, I think they're in the early stages of that build, and you know, it might be a couple of years before this team, you know, reemerges as a contender. You know, for me, you know, we talked about this a lot last week. You know, if I'm Barry Trotz, I am seriously considering, if he hasn't already, making an offer for Alex DeBrincat. Now, I am not trading. I don't know if I'm going to trade UC Saros straight up for Alex DeBrincat.
Right.
Because remember, last summer, the Chicago Blackhawks, you know, traded DeBrincat to the Senators, and they received 3 draft picks in return. The number 7 overall pick, I believe this, the number 39 pick, which was the second round, and I think
Correct.
They got a third rounder next summer. So, you know, 2 premium draft picks and an extra draft pick for DeBrincat. The expectation is that the Senators are not going to get back what they gave up to get DeBrincat. And DeBrincat had a down year by his standards last season. I think he scored 27 goals, which a lot of players will, you know, a lot of players will take. You know, we're talking about a player who has scored 40 goals twice. Now, I did some research on this yesterday for a story for Sportsnet. I mean, really, last season it was bad luck for DeBrincat, bad shooting luck. He had, you know, his true shooting percentage, which is not just goals over shots, it's goals over shot attempts. So even including shots that don't hit the net, I think it was under 6% last season. His career average is around 8%.
Yep.
So there was some of that just, you know, he was creating scoring chances at basically the same rate he was two seasons ago when he scored 40 goals for the Blackhawks. So you're just hoping that it's a down season and that if that shooting luck bounces back up, he'll be back to where he was. Yeah, I mean, I would consider trading some of those draft picks that the Predators have to get DeBrincat. Now, the contract's would be interesting. He's due a $9 million qualifying offer. He's not a $9 million player for me. You know, he's probably more in the 8 to 8.5 range, like a Philip Forsberg type contract. But I think
he's a winger.
And yeah, I mean, you know, preferably you would get a center, but I don't know which centers are, you know, available on the market, you know, young centers.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not, you know, I think it would be a good piece to have. I mean, DeBrincat is still young. He's 25. He's in his prime. He's a better scorer than anybody else you have on your team right now. And if you can eventually find a center to partner with him, then I think you have something going there. So I would not give up everything to go get DeBrincat. But if you can get him for a reasonable price, which I think you can, I would seriously consider it.
I think you should consider it for sure if you're the Predators. And look, there's a lot of things that are really interesting this offseason. I mean, we talked about the salary cap. It's going up $1 million. There are going to be some teams that are cap strapped, and maybe you can find a deal that way. We've talked about, you know, last year, that's how you got Ryan McDonagh. Tampa Bay was cap strapped, and they needed to jettison his contract, and the Predators were able to step in. If you want to do something like that this year, you can. To me, though, like, Adam, if you're doing that, you're probably doing it for a guy that is like an Alex DeBrincat, a younger guy that you could sign to long term if you want to, and that could be a part of not only next year's team, but really a part of that next wave, that next core that you're trying to build to get back to being a Stanley Cup contender. I mean, we've had some people ask us about free agency today on the text line, and we went through the list earlier. I don't expect the Predators to be, nor do I think they should be, very active by the time unrestricted free agency comes out. You know, July 1st is the start of unrestricted free agency, and you look at the list of available free agents, it's not very good. I mean, it's you've got guys that at one time have been good. You know, Patrick Kane is a free agent, and he's still a good player, but he's in hip surgery, and he's not going to be available for 4 to 6 months, and he's not coming to Nashville. The next contract that he signs is going to be a team that he thinks can win a Stanley Cup. You got Ryan O'Reilly out there. We've gone through some of the names earlier. A lot of guys that are on the other side of 30 that have been good players throughout their career, but I just, when I look at the Predators roster right now, I don't think it makes a whole lot of sense to bring in some of these older guys just based on where the Predators are and they're built. I mean, by the time, let's say you signed a Ryan O'Reilly to a 4-year deal. For two of it, like how good are they really going to be? And for the last 2 years of those deal, he'll be 35 and 36. Like, is that what you want to sign up for if you're a team out there? If you're the Predators, I don't think it makes a whole lot of sense for them to be active in free agency.
Yeah, I mean, the number one player, you know, trade on the Athletics offseason trade board is Pierre-Luc Dubois.
Yeah.
And it's amazing that he's only 24. He's about to turn 25. He'll be 25 this week. But so in the DeBrincat, to bring DeBrincat back into the conversation, Dubois fits that age bracket that you're looking for.
Yeah.
But, you know, this will be the second, if he gets traded, it'll be the second time he's been traded already.
I don't have any interest in him. There's something with him that
out of Columbus. Now he wants out of Winnipeg, and he's wanted out of Winnipeg. Like, this is not a new thing.
He wants to play in Montreal.
That is the reporting, is that he wants to play in Montreal. He's a Quebec native. But, you know, like, if Dubois did not carry so much baggage, I would consider that
for
as
sure.
someone who would, you know, as a potential number one center. But, you know, a guy who's about to be 25, already wanting out of a second, you know, already wanting out of another team. It just, it's not worth, he's not, I mean, he's good, but he's not that good where you would put up with that kind of stuff. You know, like, I just, like, if he was transcendent and he was like this, you could live with that, as most teams do. To me, Dubois is a very good player, but he's not good enough where I overlook the fact that he's now basically asking out of a second.
If you look at his numbers, I mean,
it doesn't pop off.
He's like Ryan Johansson,
right,
at the top of his powers, which is a good player.
Right. He had a career high this season, 63 points in 73 games. So
that's not what you're looking for.
No, it's not. But like there aren't very many, you know, centers available. I'm looking at the centers that are on this trade board. Number three, Mark Scheifele. He's 30 years old already. Jeez. You know, Nick Schmaltz in Arizona, 27. Yep. Kevin Hayes in Philadelphia, 31. Mikhail Backlund in Calgary, 34. None of these guys are top number one centers. I mean, Dubois, in theory, is a number one center, but he's probably, like, I think the comparison to Ryan Johansson is bang on. Like, obviously talented, picked near the top of his draft, just like Ryan Johansson. Good player, but probably not good enough to be a consistent number one center.
Yeah. Well, and that's ultimately, I mean, we talk about getting back into a championship window. I think in order to do that, at some point, the Predators and Barry Trotz specifically are going to have to find something they've never found before, and that is that top-line centerman. And the best question is, how do you go about doing that? Is that via the draft this year, where maybe you move up? Is that eventually trading the goaltender? What all goes into that? We'll get to that coming up next. Take your thoughts on the Predators, how they get back to building a championship roster as Barry Trotz officially takes over as general manager. The NHL draft in Nashville coming up next week. So we'll take your thoughts on all of that as well. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Adam Vingan, Michelle Knezvik here with you on this Monday morning. Taking your thoughts, 615-737-1025. We're looking at the offseason plan for the Predators and how the Predators get back to trying to build a Stanley Cup contender with Barry Trotz taking over as general manager. Now, it feels like, Adam, this offseason, when we have discussions like this or involving the Predators moving forward, it always kind of leads back to a discussion of, all right, well, what are they doing with the goalie? Are you signing UC Soros to a new deal when that time comes with his contract? Are you trading UC Soros and going with Yaroslav Askarov? Are you trading Askarov when the time comes and getting what you can for him with that asset and signing Soros to the next deal? Like, and there are a lot of Predators fans that have, I think, a lot of different opinions on this. Some are Team Soros all the way and they need to pay him and lock down what they have at their goaltender spot. Some are saying, you know what, you don't need to invest that much money in goaltender. Just go with Askarov and use that money to build a team around the goalie. And you and I have kind of leaned more in that direction in terms of the Soros conversation. Probably, if it was up to me, if it was up to you, and I don't want to speak for you, but using that money to build a team around your next goalie and not giving Soros $9.5 million would be the way I would go. And again, I feel like I need to clarify this every time I say it. It's not a commentary on Soros. Like, if the Predators ultimately decide to give him the money, and he makes $9 million or $9.5 million a year, whatever it'll be, I mean, he's going to be a good player. I mean, I think we know that. He's one of the best goalies in the league. I just, in terms of building a championship winner, is that the best route to go? Or could you use that money elsewhere, maybe beef up the forwards, get some help on defense, and go win a championship that way with Askarov, who you drafted in the first round, who you think is going to be pretty good? Maybe he's as good as Soros, maybe he's not. But we'll have to wait and see on that front. Would you go that route? And it kind of feels like we're at the point where whatever way you think the Predators are going, it kind of always leads back to the goalie position at this point.
No, for sure. And by the time UC Soros' contract is up, so will Askarov's. Askarov's entry-level contract expires after the 2024-25 season. I don't think it's a candidate for a slide year. So they'll both need new contracts in the summer of 2025. And at that point, you know, we don't know how often Askarov will play, so one would assume that that his first standard contract will be, you know, team friendly. Let's see. Well, UC Saros's first standard contract was a 3-year, $4.5 million contract, so a $1.5 million cap hit per season.
Yeah.
So let's just say Askarov gets that same deal, and let's assume as you have that Saros is going to make $9 million on his next contract. That's a $7.5 million savings by just putting in Askarov per year, putting Askarov over Saros, and 7.5 can get you a really good player or multiple solid players. Right. So to me, it's sort of an open and shut case. You know, I think that the money that you could save by having Askarov in that position over Saros and using that money to build a better team in front of Askarov so he doesn't have to be as good as UC Saros all the time, I think is a better use of resources than paying a goalie, you know, to be one of the top 3-5 goalies in the league.
So let me ask it to you this way, because I think we don't know what Barry Trotz is thinking on that front. He may think that the idea of trading UC Saros is preposterous, and he may not want to do it. So we'll see exactly what he thinks, because ultimately whatever he thinks is going to end up being what matters here with the Predators. But if you were the Predators, how much consideration would you have to trading UC Saros right now, this offseason? Just based on, I don't think Askarov is ready yet. I think he'll probably spend next year in Milwaukee. They signed Kevin Lankinen this past season to be their backup goalie next year, so he's under contract next year. But I also said earlier in the show, and I believe this, I don't think the value for UC Saros will ever be higher than it is right now. That doesn't necessarily mean that you have to trade him right now if your plan is to trade him, but I don't think the value will ever be higher than it is right now. Just based on his contract, he's got 2 years left at $5 million. I mean, it's a heck of a deal that UC Saros is under right now. So if you're the Predators, given where they are, given the contract that's left with UC Saros, and given the fact that I don't think Askarov is quite ready yet, how much consideration would you give to making that move this offseason if you're the Predators?
I mean, I would seriously consider it. And if it helps you get that center, that elusive number one center that Barry Trotz is after, then I think you have to do it. You know, whether that's by moving up in the draft or, you know, finding a team that is willing to give you a player of that caliber for a goalie of an excellent caliber. So, yeah, I mean, I think that if trading UC Saros helps you get that center, I don't think you think twice about it. I mean, and Kevin Lankinen has started in the NHL. He's a perfectly fine goalie. He's not, you know, I thought he was good in the backup role last season. I think, you know, if he had to be your starter for a year, or you could sign, or with the savings, you know, you could go out and sign someone like Antti Raanta or Freddie Anderson or someone just to hold down the fort as a transitional starter. Like I think those, you know, those goalies are out there. So, yeah, I mean, I am of the mind that UC Saros I agree with you. He's a great player. He's been good for a while now. It's, you know, he is clearly one of the top goalies in the league, but I don't think the Predators need him. I think if you can parlay him into a better player up front, I don't think you should hesitate.
Well, and that's going to be the decision that Barry Trotz has in front of him. Another route that you've thrown out there that we're about a week away from finding out, with next week being the draft, is the picks that they have. They got 13 picks in this year's draft. That's more than any team in the league. They've got 7 picks in the top 83 next year, so or this draft. So as we sit here just over a week away, could there be a team that the Predators are targeting to move up in the draft? Could you package together some picks and move up maybe into the top 10, maybe into the top 5 in order to try and go get that centerman that you're talking about? I mean, right now the Predators are scheduled to pick at number 15 and number 24 overall in the first round, and they've got 13 picks in this year's draft. Could you package those picks together and move up? Barry Trotz has talked about, you know, potentially going that route if a team will do it. I'm really interested to see how aggressive the Predators will be in their attempt to try to move up next week.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Athletic's most recent mock draft, and there are multiple centers going in the top 10.
Yep.
At number 1, at number 2, at number 3, at number 5, at number 8, and number 10. You know, so there are centers to be, you know, available now. Will all of those centers pan out? We don't know. But, you know, if the, you know, there are teams that, you know, that they could move up and give them plenty to think about with, you know, their second of their two first round picks or one of their multiple second round picks.
Yeah.
You know, that this is, you know, that to me, if the best way the Predators can move up is by using that ammunition. And I think I think Barry Trotz will consider it.
Will from Nashville says, what's your expectations for Askarov? I have no idea. I don't watch that close and is not as knowledgeable as we are. What's Askarov's ceilings, the floor, in your opinion?
You're giving me too much credit.
You are.
Look, he is one of the top three goalie prospects in the NHL.
I'd say that's fair.
And, you know, I think there is a lot to like about him. You know, I agree. I haven't watched a ton of him, but I remember in his draft year, people were saying he's the next big thing in the goalie world.
Well, people were comparing him to Vasilevsky,
right? So, you know, that's a lofty comparison, of
it
course.
Is.
But the I think Askarov should be a good starting goaltender in the NHL, and that's why when you have someone like that, like that's why it's easy to talk about trading UC Saros, because you have someone already in the system who could be that next guy. And if there's one thing the Predators have been able to do in their history, it's develop goaltenders.
Yeah.
So I trust the Predators to get him ready to play. I mean, it happened with Rene, it happened with Saros. You know, who else? You know, Tomas Vokoun.
Yeah.
You know, there are plenty of young goalies that the Predators have had that have become great goalies in the NHL. So, you know, I trust the Predators to do that.
It's going to be really interesting to see what happens. We're just over a week away from the NHL draft here, and Nashville will have lots more coming on that. Adam, thanks for being with us. That's going to do it for us today here on the program. You'll be back next week with us as well, so looking forward to that. Coming up next, it's time for Chase and Michelle. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3, The Game.